I'm just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
If you mean true for you is different from true for anybody else, have
yeah, absolutely,
true
because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Welcome back to Arilli Radio, number 117. This is part B, recorded Friday, July 8th, 2016. Actually, more like July 9th, 2016, where we're putting it all back together here. This is where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversation that should make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan. I've got David O'Connor. I've got Stephen Griffith down there at the bottom, and I've got Daniel Atherton. Welcome.
I am so glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too.
Welcome to the party, pal.
You missed the bloodbath that was part A. That was...
The literal and figurative bloodbath?
Yes. The literal and figurative. It was difficult. Difficult.
Well, it's time for less veggies.
Less veggies. Yep. So
More
let's
milk.
Talk about vertical farming.
Actual veggies.
Oh, it's in New Jersey.
And it's in New Jersey. As long as they don't take out any student loans to do this, it should be okay. So
they'll regret this decision later.
They may regret that decision later, yes. So the world's largest vertical farm is being built in New Jersey. I guess maybe it is the Garden State after all, yeah. let's see. So there's a video here. Let's see if that'll play nice. Okay.
No, it's Jersey.
You can't see it on the outside, but this old industrial neighborhood is an agricultural oasis. Inside this former laser tag arena, about 250 kinds of leafy greens are growing in huge quantities to be sold to local supermarkets and restaurants.
Pretty.
This is Aero Farms, a massive indoor vertical farm in Newark, New Jersey.
Our mission is to build farms in cities all over the world so people have access to fresh, great tasting, highly nutritious food.
Crops are stacked more than 30 feet high inside this 30,000 square foot space. They're grown using aeroponic technology.
Typically in indoor growing, the roots sit in water and one tries to oxygenate the water. Our key inventor realized that if we missed nutrition to the root structure, then the roots have a better oxygenation.
AeroFarm says the root misting system allows them to use 95% less water than a regular field farm. They also use no pesticides or herbicides. Instead of soil, plants are grown in reusable cloth made from recycled plastic. And instead of the sun, there are rows and rows of specialized LED lighting.
A lot of people say, sunless, wait, plants need sun. In fact, the plants don't need yellow spectrum, so we're able to reduce our energy footprint by doing things like reducing certain types of spectrum.
This sophisticated climate-controlled system cuts the growing cycle in half, so crops can be grown all year round, but with a much smaller impact on the environment.
There's all these stresses on our planet. 70% of our freshwater contamination comes from agriculture. About 70% of our freshwater usage goes to agriculture. One-third of our arable land has been degraded in the last 40 years. All these macro trends point to the fact that we need a new way to feed our planet.
One of the early champions of vertical farming is Columbia University ecologist Dixon DePommier. In 1999, DePommier and his students proposed that vertical farms could feed overpopulated cities while using less land and less water. They would also cut greenhouse gases by eliminating the need to transport food over long distances. And the idea is finally taking root. Over the past few years, vertical farms have sprouted all over the world, including in Vancouver, Singapore, Panama, the UK, and around the US. Here in Newark, Aero Farms is building out another new farm in a former steel mill, one that's bigger than a football field. Once it's fully operational, it's expected to produce 2 million pounds of greens a year, all grown vertically.
We listen to the plants very carefully to try and understand what they're telling us and try and optimize all these different qualities of a plant. It's a tough business, but it's one that's going to stay and it's going to have a bigger and bigger impact.
Do you think vertical farms will help solve our food production problems? Let us know in the comments below. And check out this next episode to see how this major U.S. city is striving to become zero waste.
When I started at Recology,
well, that's
23
fun. Okay.
Years ago.
That's good stuff.
So, gentlemen, what do you think about vertical farming?
I think we've needed this for a long time.
Yeah, I've seen the Singapore building when that started about 5 years ago or so, and I've been going, this is literally what we need. We can pull back on the hardcore major field farming and the massive macro farms that we've got all across the Midwest, and instead produce the same stuff in less time with less problems, again, less pesticide, less water usage, less everything else, in the cities where they're going to be primarily consumed. I could see one of these being in, minimum one of these being in every single major city, at least in the United States, if not across the globe.
But how about, on top of that, there are places that used to be back when America made stuff, there's tons of infrastructure that's still extant and standing, just needs renovation in places like Pittsburgh and Detroit, where you could easily turn some of that car manufacturing and steel manufacturing infrastructure, and with some money and some elbow grease, turn it into vertical farming.
Well, it's certainly just how they're turning a former steel mill into another farm. Yeah. I mean, that's...
So it could turn some of these industrial centers that have had a significant economic and social downturn and have them producing stuff again.
And there's so many companies that are doing this too. I mean, this is obviously something that works. Otherwise there wouldn't be any people doing it, much less multiple companies.
Well, also, but here's where we follow the money.
Follow the money.
A lot of aero farming is targeted by the restaurant industry because they can get fresher ingredients this way.
Yeah.
Instead of it having to be transported from, you know, miles, miles, states over, or having to have tons of preservatives thrown into it, the trend towards more locally grown food has pushed for aero farming.
Yeah, because it takes the distance from the farm to the plate.
To table.
Yeah, farm to table. It reduces that order of magnitude.
Yeah, and the food's tastier. Also, restaurants are happier because it's typically cheaper. So it's saving them money, and there is such demand for this, it has pushed vertical farming more and more towards the forefront. This is where actually economics works.
I mean, speaking of cheaper, I'm sure also if you look at it in a comparison between, you know, that building there could produce 2 million pounds of food a year. Okay. Compare that to something sizable, to a macro farm out in the Midwest. Okay. And then just follow the money. How much does it cost?
Yeah.
And I almost guarantee you the aero farm is going to be
cheaper
by an order of magnitude.
Also, you're not having to worry about pesticides.
Or natural disasters.
Yeah.
Tornado cuts through your farm, you're screwed.
Well, if a tornado hits your plant, you're still screwed.
It depends on how big it is, but also depends how well built the building is. Some of them can take it.
You also have to worry less and less about bioadaptive pests. So when they adapt to certain pesticides, they'll still be able to ruin your crops.
Yeah, and in an enclosed environment, you can constantly monitor with computer algorithms. You can just put a webcam on every grow
every
bed
tray,
and just watch it for, you know, the right spectrum release, and, you know, you can just plot it over time. You can let the algorithm figure out exactly what the plant needs based on what plant type it is.
And you can also, again, it's a more controlled environment.
Yeah.
So you're less likely to have invasive pests.
It's all about control. All about control. I
mean, something this could bring back the, you know, a modern version of the old farmer. Instead of getting up and, you know, at the crack of dawn and getting on your tractor and going out there and tilling your fields, you get up at possibly the crack of dawn and you look at your computer screen to see how all the trays are doing and what's being rotated.
You can get your readouts right then, right with your coffee.
And if something happens, the computer will just ping you.
Yeah.
And say, oh, there's a water leak in, you know, Tower 9 or whatever. Yep, that's what we're going to do today. We're going to go fix that.
And it keeps any kind of disasters or problems like that to a minimum versus, if you blow a major water main on a macro farm, well, crap, you've got to get, dig up how much and do all kinds of piping of that and shut down water for a time. Whereas this is, oh, look, you blew a hose.
Yeah.
Okay, patch the hose or replace it. It's 20 minutes, an hour, done.
Yeah. This
also makes it so that it's less disruptive to the supply chain.
It reduces the fossil fuel cost to get products to market.
It also makes it easier for relief efforts.
Again, not using pesticides. People don't realize a lot of oil is actually used for pesticides.
This would technically be organic, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Should be, yeah.
Then you can slap that lovely organic label on there and sell it at a premium to Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Oh, no. No, with something like this, you're going to want to brand it as something other than what exists currently.
Organic air plants.
It would just be, I would say, you got to keep it simple, like hydroponic. Yeah. Hydroponic crops.
Yeah, this is aeroponic. Yeah.
Yeah, this is aeroponics. But, no, every major city should have this, and also every single former industrial center should be. If I were a venture capitalist and I just saw this video, I'd be going, yes, please, where do I invest?
Yeah. Take my money.
Because this is an investment, not just short term. This is the long term investment that builds up a dynasty.
How many big box stores have gone ghost, where you just have a giant shell? There's one in every community.
Oh yeah.
Enough
malls that go dead. You know,
Titusville Mall, baby.
How many Kmarts out there have just become empty? How many Circuit Cities? How many Walmarts decided that their Walmart wasn't big enough, so they went and built a bigger Super Walmart, and they left the smaller normal Walmart behind?
Same thing with the Targets.
Yeah. So there are big box stores out there that have everything you need to make something like this a reality. So
in fact, there's an old Albertsons I can immediately think of that is not but less than 5 miles from my house.
You know, same. And an Albertsons.
All right, so if I've won the lottery, I know what we're doing. We're investing this crap.
We're doing this. We're all becoming modern farmers.
O'Reilly Radio, aeroponics.
Aeroponics.
Listen to us and then eat.
But with a nice salad. This is something that every community could and should invest in. That community garden concept? It's beautiful. It makes for wonderful little press junk and things. This is a better investment.
It's density. It's farming density. Just how large, farms, they take a lot of land in the horizontal plane. This is the vertical plane. So it's just it's the same way with how many people are you going to fit in an apartment building? You're going to fit more in an apartment building than you are in an acre of land.
Also, just think if you partnered this with a community work program where you teach those that are down on the luck, homeless, how to do this process.
Schools. High schools.
Yeah. But investing in your workforce, investing in your community, and investing in a product that is always going to be in demand. You can invest in farms, and you can invest in cemeteries. Those will always be the demand.
People are always going to die, and before that, they're always going to eat. So yes, indeed, you have there's prospects here. There's big prospects, and I know that I've got some friends out there in some industries, and one of them is organic food delivery services. So they're getting it from farmers, and then they're packaging it up into a meal plan kind of thing, and they're delivering it to your door for a monthly fee or a weekly fee or whatever. If you have something like this, they pull up their car or truck, you know, right to the back, load it up with the day's deliveries, out they go a few blocks.
Keeps costs way
super way fresh. Down. Absolutely super fresh.
Also, it keeps environmental impact down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're not burning all that oil transporting it.
Yeah.
It's creating jobs. Well, it's creating fantastic jobs.
If the vehicles don't have to go very far, they can all be electric.
Yeah.
Biodiesel.
Well, certainly. Biodiesel is always an option, but you don't even need to do that. You don't even need to do that. You know, if you take these big box stores, again, you know, it's all about that square footage, mm-hmm. and you take the roof is all solar voltaics at that point. So then you are farming with the sun. You're putting the sun directly into the LEDs and right into the plants.
You're just what you do is you take
converting nice. the spectrum they need, though.
You take
science is there, though.
It's exciting.
You take a stadium size area, right?
Mm-hmm.
Farming goes in the middle. You rent out the little stores and shops.
Ooh, nice.
Okay. So
you're doing sort of like markets, food stalls over in Singapore.
You know, we may have to stop the show here because we might have just come up with a whole business plan idea, you know.
We're going to go ahead and put a pin in this. Anybody out there listening, sorry, we've already taken it. Trademark, copyright, us.
Just cut us in. Just cut us in.
Our intellectual property. Come talk to us.
Just cut us in. We'll cut you a great deal.
You have a flag.
Just a couple points. No big deal.
We have an owl.
You know what I didn't do, though? I didn't do this.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
If you're scientifically literate, the world looks very different to you. It's not just a lot of mysterious things happening. There's a lot we understand out there. And that understanding empowers you.
If you base medicine on science, you cure people. If you base the design of planes on science, they fly. If you base the design of rockets on science, they reach the moon. It works, bitches.
Yes, there. Now I feel more at home. And it makes sense if we're going to transition from farms, where we're going to make those apple pies, but straight out to Jupiter.
I.e., get off this rock.
Getting off this rock.
We have to send Jupiter's wife to take a look at him and all of his mistresses.
That's right, because Jupiter being one of the names for...
The king of the gods.
Yes.
Also known as Zeus if you went Greek.
Yes. His wife's name is Juno, and all of his mistresses happen to be the moons of Jupiter. So Juno was sent to go check on Jupiter's mistresses. and people think scientists don't have a sense of humor. We just have the long game.
5 years to tell this joke, man. Five years.
That's right. So, scientists and space enthusiasts celebrated late Monday night as the spacecraft Juno successfully entered Jupiter's orbit after a five-year journey and 1.7 billion miles of space travel. Quote, "We just did the hardest thing NASA's ever done." Scott Bolton, Juno's principal investigator, could be heard telling his colleagues amid cheers in the moments after the spacecraft completed its task. Successful maneuver known as an orbital insertion was executed via a series of pre-programmed commands that engineers transmitted hundreds of millions of miles to the outer solar system. The move, which represented the riskiest moment in the mission since Juno launched in August 2011, involved firing the spacecraft's main engine so that the probe could slow down enough to leverage the planet's gravity to shift into its orbit. It's a pretty big deal, guys.
That is a pretty big deal. I'm not sure the hardest thing NASA has ever done. I'd put that to the rocket-powered sky crane.
I was thinking that, yeah.
Yeah, that might be a level of difficulty above.
dropping a Jeep from a rocket-powered sky crane onto a different planet. I really think that does take the cake. But, this is a big deal. This
just
is
the
a
fact
big deal.
That you have to say rocket-powered sky crane in one sentence.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
JPL is awesome that way. I really, that's pretty cool.
The thing that I love, though, is they actually recorded the Juno going through the different magnetic fields of Jupiter, and you actually hear Jupiter roaring as it does.
Yes, let's see here.
It's cool.
Do they have the...
Does it sound something like, bitch, leave me alone?
I'm looking for... No, it doesn't look like they have the audio for that on this one. But yeah, I saw that, and it's definitely kind of creepy.
It's not what it looks like.
It's precisely what it looks like.
Things Jupiter says.
Nice. Planetary scientists on Earth will wait for Juno to complete a 53-day orbit after the probe, after which the probe will then begin to transmit a heap of data about what it observes. Juno is set to orbit Jupiter 37 times in 2 years. So much about the environment that will have to withstand is unknown. Yeah, I can apparently no longer talk after midnight. So there's a lovely video. We're not going to watch that, but you can go look at for yourself. We have show notes available out at orreallyradio.com, show 117. Okay. B117B for this one. Okay. Let's see. Moving right along, but still staying in space, but still on the ground in this one. China has kind of taken the cake. They built a really big radio telescope. 30 soccer fields in diameter here. And they're looking for aliens.
All that vertical farming.
There's a lot of vertical farming potential there. Yeah, absolutely. So it's the last of the telescope's 4,450 triangular panels was fitted into the dish this weekend, ahead of the telescope's planned launch in September. The 500-meter aperture spherical telescope, or FAST, is the size of 30 soccer fields and has taken over 5 years and $180 million to build. Telescope of this is of great significance for humans to explore the universe and extraterrestrial civilization, said Chinese science fiction writer and Hugo Award winner Liu Xiaong. I butchered the name on purpose. No, not really. I just don't know how to spell it. Okay. During the final installation, I hope scientists can make epoch-making discoveries.
More importantly, this will allow Chinese Jodie Foster to finally find her father.
Oh, man.
Yep, went there.
Oh, Stephen, I've missed you. That.
Even Carl Sagan is groaning.
That was good. No, he's probably doing... He probably snorted.
But... No, this is nice. Fantastic because this will allow us to more easily detect and narrow in on pulsars, quasars, supernovae, because we'll be able to listen for it and find it.
More than 9,000 residents living within a 5-kilometer distance of FAST were relocated during the telescope's construction, each receiving 12,000 yuan, about $1,800 in compensation from the Chinese government, according to the state media, with additional funds given to individuals from ethnic minorities.
Yeah. That's the downside.
Well, the thing is, that might be really good. We don't know.
Yeah. You don't know what it costs.
We just don't know.
Here in China. Because, I mean, it sounds like shit pay for us, but yeah. That could be full
no,
cost
I'm
of
totally
a new
sure
house.
It's still crap pay.
Well, again, it depends on your cost of living. If you can get by on hardly anything, and you don't necessarily have to move very far, and it doesn't cost you a lot to get a new place, we don't know. That's the thing. We just don't know.
Where is it?
Where is this?
That's my question.
Well, it's rather large, so I don't think you can miss it, Steve.
No. Like, specifically, where in China is this thing located?
Probably where we put everything scientific.
You should probably be able to see it from space.
Pinteng County, Guizhou Province, Southwest China.
Find the middle of nowhere. And then drive. You turn off of the road into the jungle.
Right. Now, here's the thing.
35 miles an hour for 42 minutes, and you slam on brakes.
Now, you guys are aware that the Arecibo Observatory, they keep talking about sunsetting it.
Yep.
This is twice as big as the Arecibo Observatory. Well, nearly twice as big. Arecibo is 300 meters. This is 500.
Yeah, but we be able to...
We won't control
listen,
it.
We'd be able to listen more with having both of them on.
Yeah. But we...
Actually, though, the Arecibo Observatory has been outplaced far by, like, the VLA and such.
Well, no, of single observatories, not arrays.
Not arrays, true.
Of single observatory, yeah. it was still the big one. And now it's been superseded here. Or at least it will in September.
I like that they were able to do it for only $180 million. But I'm not sure that this moves us towards getting off the rock.
It may, but who knows what it's going to tell us to do. I think the Indian space agencies are actually going to be the first ones that really do colonies off planet.
Yeah, I hope so.
As a quick sidebar, that region is actually one of the most ethnically diverse in China, and 55% of that province is actually designated as autonomous regions for ethnic minorities. So essentially, they kicked in our view, they kicked a bunch of Indians off their reservation to build this damn thing.
Cool. Yeah, China.
Hence why they said, with additional funds given to individuals from ethnic minorities.
Yeah.
That's why they called that out.
Yeah.
Well done, Steven. Well done.
Well, China's one of my interests, so.
Splendid. Okay. And staying with the space race as it is, meet the X-57, NASA's electric plane powered by sunlight.
Sweet.
About time.
Space Agency has marked a return to its X series of experimental aircraft that could improve fuel efficiency by up to 500%.
Woo! One can only hope.
Well, that's
nothing to sneeze at.
That is nothing to sneeze at. The X-57 Maxwell, which will be driven by 14 electric engines, is a modification of another aircraft, the twin engine Technum P-2006T. With a return of piloted X-planes to NASA's research capabilities, which is a key part of our 10-year-long New Aviation Horizons initiative, the general aviation-sized X-57 will take the first step in opening a new era of aviation. This was stated by Charles Bolden, the NASA administrator, during a keynote speech in Washington. It looks pretty cool. I must say,
the concept is weird in comparison to the actual plane.
Oh yeah, it's just,
and the actual Technum P-2006T versus that artist concept is weird.
Yeah, this is the artist concept.
It almost looks like they're doing a hemispherical wing with a bunch of fans just slamming the bottom half of it with
the
air.
You have two rotors and then basically attached to a toothpick, which is attached to the body of the plane.
So this is So the actual plane, it is a very modified wing.
Yeah. Extraordinarily modified wing.
Yeah, because they've got, it's a typical lifting body on the Tecum, but here's another view of the
Concept
for NASA.
Maybe with the extra engines just running air over the wings, you can get away with a much thinner profile wing.
That's probably it. And it is a more bulbous teardrop on there. So, Well, you know, I'm not an aeronautical engineer, but they are. So, good on you, mates. So let's see how that works. We'll keep a look.
I want to go back to Widge aircraft. Those always just look cool.
But wait, the Now, what was the deal with it being solar powered, though? Let's see here. Replacing the Technum's original wing with two gas-fueled piston engines with a long, skinny wing embedded with 14 electric motors, 12 on the leading edge for takeoff and landings, and one large motor on each wingtip. So the 12 engines will be used during takeoffs and landings, and the wingtip engines will take over at cruising speeds. The aim is to produce an aircraft that uses 500% less energy and can cruise at 280 kilometers per hour. It'll also be quieter, allowing it to take off and land in populated areas at all hours. Well, that's good, too.
Well, most fuel is used on takeoff.
And powered by batteries recharged through solar cells.
Well, you also have the extra engines, which, if they're not being used to actually propel the plane, will potentially generate some power.
Well, no, it replaced the original wing and the two gas-fueled piston engines.
Yeah, no. The other 14 engines that aren't in use when you're not taking off and landing are still going to have air going over them as the plane moves forward, so they could be generating electricity to help along the flight.
Oh. Well...
Yeah, true, so that'd be a free-spinning rotor.
It's not really free-spinning. Because any time that you're doing that, then you're creating a mechanical load on the circuits. So
right, but as long as you're not taking too much mechanical load out of it, you're still going to gain more than...
Yeah, but you're creating resistance in gain of power. So it depends on whether or not you want it to be as passive as possible to just maintain the wing shape. Or you want it to buffet the air going past the wing, because that's what's going to happen. You would then disrupt the amount, the airflow over the wing.
In one sense, the buffeting over the top of the wing could create more vacuum.
But it would not be a directed force.
Yeah,
it would be more chaotic.
That it could be semi-uniform across the whole section of the wing.
Well, they could also pull the... I'm not seeing any rotor profiles on that artist concept there.
Yeah.
So
some other ones. They do have rotors on them.
Well, yeah, but what it could be is that once they achieve a certain position, that they fold back.
Well, it's also possible that they're not actually like propellers. They could be little like turbines.
That's possible too. Yeah.
Small electric turbines, which would cause minimal drag.
Yeah.
And minimal buffeting as you go through the air.
Now, if that's the case, then I'm all for it. All for it. It just may not be necessary. It may be a complication.
Well, none of the X-planes were necessary until you get the benefit of what they taught us about flight.
Well, sure, yeah. So, but this is specifically for efficiency.
Yeah.
The others were mostly for speed.
Proof of concept for efficiency.
Yeah. So, speaking of proofs of concept, 3D printing produces cartilage from strands of bio ink. Now, David, you found this one?
Yeah, this has been going around on Facebook. I found the Penn State article that talks about it, and what they did was they basically took like a, not algae per se, but kind of a derivative of algae, and they made tubes out of it, which they then packed full of cartilage inside the tube. And they give it some time to let the cartilage basically congeal together a little bit. And once that's done, they can remove the cartilage from the tubes and use it to print things in a 3D printer-esque method.
Hmm. Wow.
So it's cultivated cartilage that is then printed.
Yep.
Cartilage strand substitute.
They're using, I think, cow cartilage, but...
Yeah.
I mean, how far is the stretch to human cartilage? Not real far.
No. Yeah, cow cartilage. Huh.
Yeah, stripping the DNA out of it, at that point, it's just lattice work.
Well, and resolution, yeah. Huh.
Be able to 3D print an ear.
Mm-hmm.
That's some neat stuff.
Very cool.
Neat stuff.
Yep,
so
this is where my comment of there will be dragons. We're going to be those dragons.
I'm okay with this.
The cartilage strand substitutes for ink in the 3D printing process, using a specially designed prototype nozzle that can hold and feed the cartilage strand. The 3D printer lays down rows of cartilage strand in any pattern the researcher chooses. After about a half an hour, the cartilage patch self-adheres enough to move to a petri dish. The researchers put the patch in a nutrient media to allow it to further integrate into a single piece of tissue. Eventually, the strands fully attach and fuse together. Mm. Ah,
this
yes.
This makes replacing knees a lot easier.
Knees, yeah. Hips, shit. Replace the whole leg.
Probably getting close.
Alpha wear.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Natural cartilage forms with pressure from the joints and Osbolot, which is a great name, by the way, for a scientist, thinks that mechanical pressure on the artificial cartilage will improve the mechanical properties itself.
Gotta flex it.
Nice. All right. Well, good job, guys, at, Iowa, now Harvard, and Penn State. Excellent. Fantastic.
On a quick side note, going back to the plane.
Yeah.
The reason it's called the Maxwell is because it's actually named after James Clark Maxwell, who's famous for Maxwell's demon.
What is Maxwell's demon?
Let me actually look that up because I can give you a better explanation this way.
Well, actually, right here it says celebrating James Maxwell, the father of light.
That too.
Physicist who discovered light that as an electromagnetic wave. I think that might be more why.
Well, beyond that, but perhaps. Maxwell's demon is one thing that he's one of the other things he's known for. What I am most familiar with is he came up with a thought experiment as to how the second law of thermodynamics could hypothetically be violated.
Oh, fun. Oh, this article is exclusive to subscribers.
You.
Paywall!
No paywall. No paywall. Go bye-bye. Okay.
Put it in the Hangouts. That's for later.
Let's see.
All right.
Maxwell's now. Demon. Copy. Boom. Okay, so you've got this one, don't you, Daniel?
Yeah.
Scientific American, the Italian Alps hold a secret.
We discovered something. Humanity has discovered a new viper.
My God, it wasn't a microbe.
No, we discovered a new viper. V. Vosler. Significantly different genetics from the common adder and all other Western European vipers. Its closest genetic relatives, in fact, are actually two viper species living far away in the Caucasus Mountains. It experienced a rather severe genetic bottleneck, at least sometime in its past, limiting its current genetic variability. It's very limited range. Just about 500 square kilometers, and only two main sites, each with high rainfall valleys. So it's a very, very fine, very small range, hard to find, and new viper species in the Italian Alps.
Interesting.
A place that we thought we knew, but we found something new there.
Nature finds a way.
Life finds a way.
That's right. Life finds a way. Well,
I just thought that was nifty.
It is. So they're gonna work on conserving it. Because
yes.
There are certain climate models that indicate in the next 20 years these valleys will become far wetter and warmer, which will, of course, change their habitat, and also that certain overzealous collectors might come in and try to poach them. It's nice that we can have something new and maybe want to immediately protect it as opposed to kill it.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing. All right. So with that, I believe we're on to Law and Order. So, out on the SCOTUS blog, there was a little article that they're going to be looking at some major new controversies next term. I'm not sure that any of this is actually going to bear any fruit, because, of course, they look at the cases and then may decide that they're going to look at them.
Decide which ones to hear.
Yeah, so, of course, we're going to keep an eye on that. Let's see, a couple of the highlights here. Are there any highlights here that we can look at? Lynch versus Morales Santana, an appeal by the federal government, seeks to defend the constitutionality of less favorable treatment for purposes of U.S. citizenship of a child born abroad whose father is a U.S. citizen than the treatment given to a child born abroad whose mother is a U.S. citizen. Well, that seems a sticky wicket. Yeah.
That ain't right.
Yeah. Why would that even make it all the way to the Supreme Court? Huh. Okay, so that's interesting in and of itself. Ivy versus Morath.
Appeal by the federal government.
Yeah. Defending the constitutionality of less favorable treatment. So equal treatment? Defending equal treatment?
Doesn't sound like equal treatment.
Can we just say that, oh yeah, yeah, we're a patriarchal society and we don't give a shit about women?
Well, the thing is,
standard that has been set.
Well, the thing is the federal government trying to knock them down a peg as opposed to raise the other one up? Like, no, you're both going to be treated the same, which does not provide a favorable outcome to the patriarchy. Of course,
gonna need better definition on this one.
We could dive in, but then we'd be here all night. So yeah. we'll leave that that for us and
that's
for you to take a look at that later. So Lynch versus Morales Santana. Okay,
interesting.
Yes. Ivy versus Morath, a case pursued by 5 hearing-impaired Texans, asked the court to clarify when a state agency is responsible for discrimination against the disabled when the agency farms out a public program to a private vendor.
Ooh, that's a good one.
The dispute in the case involves a plea by the disabled individuals to have a sign language interpreter provided for classes at privately run driver's ed classes. The court asked the U.S. Solicitor General for the government's view on the case, and the response urged the justices to bypass review. Review was granted anyway. Huh. Okay, so that'll be another interesting one to look at. Let's see, Venezuela versus Helmerich and Payne International. A case filed by the South American nation seeking to have the court clarify when a foreign government may be sued in U.S. courts for seizing property located in that country but owned by a U.S. firm.
Huh.
Oh, this will get interesting with the TPP and the TTIP.
Yeah.
That's going to get really sticky. So the
but
case,
if they set the precedent before those trade agreements come into play, that will be in the books before the
right
acts, and then it gets kicked back to the court.
Right. But of course, with some of those trade deals, they get to bypass a lot of that anyway. So
they get to bypass it, but yeah, not all of it.
Right.
So if the court hears it early and it's already on the books, it could affect the TPP and the TPIP.
Yeah, so Venezuela wants to clarify what it means by certain things. So,
well, the Supreme Court could clarify it, and then they could add language to the TPP and the TTIP to move that
right
definition goalpost.
Right, yeah. And so, that's more than possible.
I don't know that the timing necessarily behooves them or will be on their side in the end.
Well, those with the red pen can always jump in at any time, since we still don't know what's in the damn thing. Szwecki versus Jevic Holding Corp. In a test of whether a bankruptcy court may dismiss a case that has been settled through an agreement that gives payment to lower-ranking creditors ahead of more senior-ranked creditors.
Why would creditors get payment? Exactly.
Well, in bankruptcy court, when you're liquidating the assets to take out...
It's supposed to be senior
everything.
On down.
Yeah. At least, as far as I know, it's always traditionally been that way.
Yeah.
This is going to exemplify violates that.
Whether a bankruptcy court may dismiss a case that has been settled through an agreement that gives payment to lower-ranking creditors ahead of more senior-ranked creditors. Accepting the suggestion of the Solicitor General, the court agreed to hear the case. The case involved the failure to follow the priority due to former workers' benefit claims when the New Jersey trucking company filed for bankruptcy after it was taken over by investors in a leveraged buyout. Oh, that's complicated.
Oh,
that's law upon law.
The workers are probably the lower
priority.
Lower priority.
19 states joined in urging the justices to decide the case. The case raises a major legal question over how bankruptcy courts are to deal with so-called structural dismissals, apparently an increasing phenomenon in bankruptcy practices.
No way.
Shocking. So... Mm. That'll be
somebody,
that's
somebody found a shady way to make money.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. In the structured leveraged buyout. Where in the leveraged buyout, they get to determine which creditors get their money first. And then those at the back end of their goals get shafted with whatever's left.
Wow.
That's how that is. That's how that is. So they're determining
awesome.
How the structure is. Okay. So, yeah, I can see how a bunch of states would want to know exactly how that's going to pan out. So, all right. Lightfoot versus Cendant Mortgage Corp. Ooh, another mortgage company. Okay. It involves an appeal by two Californians involved in a mortgage dispute. They asked the court to spell out when a federal court has the authority to decide a case against Fannie Mae, the Federal National Mortgage Association. That is a federally chartered corporation that Congress has given the right to sue and be sued. The question is what that provision means. This was another petition that the court accepted for review at the suggestion of the U.S. Solicitor General. Huh. So, okay, mortgage dispute, ask the court to spell out when a federal court has the authority to decide a case against the Federal National Mortgage Association. Huh. So can a federal court decide against a federal corporation? Is there another way? It has to be, you know, given that there's no alternative.
Yeah, you're dealing with something at that high of a level, it has to be a federal decision.
Yeah.
Question is it the courts or is it the Congress?
Since Fannie Mae is actually technically a corporation at this point, and given who's bringing it, it's the courts.
Okay.
Yeah, Congress has given it the right... given the corporation rights as a corporation to be sued and whatever. So
you're saying that Fannie Mae is a person?
Why,
but
yes.
This is United, yes.
Why, yes. Fannie Mae is a federal person.
She's currently dating Freddie Mac.
What does Sally Mae think of this?
She's macking the knife. Okay. So that's going to be interesting. That's going to be really interesting stuff, at least for those of us that are interested in legal matters that make the world go round. And what's this? Dead State.
Yep, this is
how did Dead State
news with some good news.
Disturbing text from Michelle Carter.
So,
this 17-year-old girl pressured her boyfriend through a series of text messages to commit suicide, to which he did.
It is horrifying.
I read at your own risk, and disgust. But this young lady is being prosecuted by the state of Massachusetts for manslaughter due to her abuse. So that's the good news, is that the case is actually being tried.
Yeah, no, these text messages were... It's sick.
Why would she do that?
There's...
Yeah, Jeez. I can't even read it. I get the beginning, I'm like, no, I can see where this is going. And I
like, murderous sociopath sick.
But the case is actually being tried.
The case is being tried as it should be. Because...
Now, because she was 17 at the time, it will be in juvenile court. But at least the case is being tried.
She is something to keep humanly possible to murder without actually pulling the trigger.
It's worth keeping an eye on and seeing how the verdict goes, because this will set precedent.
Yeah,
this is disturbing.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole you don't go down without a lot of liquor.
Holy
someone to cuddle afterwards,
and possibly a psychiatrist on the other line, ready to prescribe something strong afterwards.
Yeah, no, let me tell you something I just read.
No, again, I would say I read at your own risk. But the good news is that this is getting tried, this is getting heard, and this will set precedent.
Just give people ideas. I've watched police dash cam footage of some of these incidents that have been happening and some that have happened over the course of several years. Even I have problems reading what this woman is writing.
Yeah, this is a whole different type of horrifying.
This is
just like, I mean, I'm sure that you guys are familiar with how cringeworthy the incident was, where there's the camera footage of the cop. He's struggling with the guy. The guy is running away slowly, like super slowly, and he gets shot 8 times in the back. And then they have video of the cops moving evidence around to make it look like something different happened. This is even more sinister than that in its own way.
Again, I'm not gonna.
Okay, haha! I'm procrastinating.
You know, that's something I'm actually okay about procrastinating about. Let's be honest here.
I'm going to procrastinate for another 70 freaking years if I can.
It's a sick and awful case, but it's a case that at least the courts are taking seriously.
Yeah, this has to be reviewed. Because, like, there's cyberbullying, and then there's that. And that's a whole new level. That was...
Well, it gets down to the whole issue of what this is primarily going to address is talking somebody into an act a punishable thing if the act they commit is, in fact, illegal?
Well, yes. It is illegal to hire a hitman.
It's
hiring.
It's illegal to commit
suicide.
Telling
your best friend, hey, you should hire a hitman to kill your wife. Is that legal or not?
If you are petitioning someone to kill another person.
This is essentially broadening the term of accessory.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is the legal precedent here. is broadening the accessory title. So
it'll be good.
So again, you could in this way broaden a number of crimes and make it more liable, especially in our electronic age, where people can use social pressures and other means that are transmitted electronically to pressure someone to commit a crime or self-harm.
It'll be interesting to see how tough the vagina is on the prosecuting attorney in this case to see how far they're going to be willing to push this.
Again, it is manslaughter.
Well, I'm disturbed.
It is in juvenile court.
This is this is what evil looks like, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Not what you expected.
This is the subtle insidious evil.
Yeah.
But this is something that I saw it earlier in the week. I put a pin in it because this needed to be at least discussed.
When are you going to do it? Stop ignoring the question. When are you going to kill yourself? Why? Why does that even come up?
It comes up when your soul your soul is black and filled with terrors.
Now, it comes up when you find out that wonderful lady you're dating is actually a necromancer and she just needs to complete her thesis.
Okay. Well, okay. Did. That's a good way to end this.
Goddamn reanimation.
That's
things with humor. That's how I deal with it.
That's as good as it's going to get, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Moving right.
You're the kind of woman that would kill a man and not even have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reanimation.
Hi, Red Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cash, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us 470-222-6759. Bye.
It's time for another good idea, bad idea. Good idea.
So in talking about the vertical farming, I thought this was an amazing idea, too. This neighborhood is completely planned to grow its own food, power itself, and handle its own waste. It's called Regen Village outside of Amsterdam. It doesn't need a grid or food system.
Why am I not surprised?
It's the model for the future, a fully closed loop settlement.
So, I'm not surprised that it's being built.
Not here.
Yeah, not here. No.
Yeah, no surprise there. Because there's probably laws in the state or county books that prevents this from existing.
And see, they're doing vertical farming as well.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
For those of you that are only in audio, I'm going through a little slideshow. And basically, it's like every house is also a greenhouse. Like, encased in glass.
There's solar paneling involved in some places.
Yeah, there's definitely some voltaics going on. But mostly,
oh, so cool.
Yeah, they're all like little every little enclave there has its own little vertical farm taking care of itself.
Oh, and look, it's a city that's not built for cars, which means people will actually exercise.
That's right.
What's
that about? That? Exercise. Wait, which?
I don't even like to go outside.
Well, it depends on your environment.
Well, again, my giant criticism after spending time in Europe and then coming back to the States is we design our cities so poorly.
Oh, no. We design them for a very specific effect, and that effect is you have to have a car to drive anywhere because you have to drive somewhere to get all of your needs.
Yeah.
Well, we don't, also
cannot.
We don't incorporate public transit into our cities.
Oh, well, that doesn't burn enough oil. Like,
you're such a cynic,
that
David.
Goes over the lobbying which took place on behalf of the oil industry to redesign our cities and also destroy mass transit in this country because they saw what it was doing in Europe. And what it was doing was reducing the amount of oil which was burned, which meant that there was less demand for their product. which meant less profits.
LA once had a subway. It was destroyed by the automakers and Firestone because there weren't tires being bought, there weren't vehicles being bought, and there wasn't oil going into them to drive them places.
And
so they bought up.
We don't have the high speed rail here that we voted for.
Right.
Well, yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It'd be far too efficient.
I'm watching the video little slideshow thing they have of the thing being built.
Yeah.
And I am both incredibly fascinated, and a part of me is a tiny bit horrified, because when I was in college, I took a class on utopias and dystopias. This is almost, even by actual freaking design, exact planning of what one of those was. I think it may have been looking backward or one of those. Just the way the buildings are designed, the way the layout is done is exactly like one of those, like, 18th century or 19th century,
yeah,
like, descriptions of a utopia.
All you need is a 12-foot palisade around it, and you have an ancient village.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you have a fortress in the center for all the townspeople to run to in times of crisis, then you've gone back to feudal times.
Well, that would obviously be the... That'd be the underground lair, because this is very Disney-esque. You know, this is what Disney would want.
There's a sub-level to the entire community.
Absolutely. There's a basement level to the whole thing.
They have crystal silos in the center.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing. Yeah. Whole thing's just a giant missile silo cover.
Don't screw with Amsterdam, man.
It slides.
Yep. It just slides over. Yep. Any household waste that can be composted will feed livestock or soldier flies. The soldier flies will feed fish. The fish waste will fertilize the aquaculture system that produces fruit and vegetables for the homes. Seasonal gardens will be fertilized by waste from the livestock. By using the most advanced methods for growing food, a combination of aeroponics, aquaponics, permaculture, food forests, and high-yield organic farming, the neighborhood will grow many times more food than traditional farm of the same size with fewer resources. Aquaponics, for example, can produce 10 times as much produce on the same amount of land with 90% less water, which we already discussed. We anticipate literally tons of abundant organic food every year, from vegetables, fruits, nuts, legumes, fish, eggs, chicken, small animal dairy, and protein that can continually grow and yield in vertical garden systems all year long to supplement the seasonal gardens and farming adjacent. This is stated by James Elrich, CEO of Regen Villages, the California-based developer, which will also manage the neighborhood/farm. So it's being managed by a California company in Amsterdam, because obviously you can't get away with this kind of thing here in the States.
Yeah.
No, but they have the engineering capability and the venture capital up in California to do this over outside of New Amsterdam.
Right. Yeah, they have all of the individual pieces in California, but no one in this country wants them to put it all together into one thing. It doesn't fit our culture.
Right. The community will produce its own energy.
It's very European.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Amsterdam, unlike California, sort of place, I will agree there are times where we get a little too regulation happy. We get a lot of countering really regulations. Amsterdam has the right regulations.
Well, I mean, one of the things that's been regulated over there, and we're seeing more and more European countries do this, is any new building that's going to be built is going to have solar. Oh, by the way, every new building that's going to be built is going to have a greenhouse on top of it.
Yep.
Yeah. The most compelling new piece of technology, which I'm sure we've covered already, was clear solar panels.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
those are amazing.
You've got those, and then the other ones, which are from England, are the infrareds, which will work 24 hours.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Combine all that together.
You just build your greenhouses out of clear solar panels.
I think that's the plan.
And then you put along the walls of all your solid buildings for opaque walls the infrareds.
Yep. A biogas plant will turn any non-compostable household waste into power and water. A water storage system will collect rainwater and gray water and redistribute it to seasonal gardens and the aquaponics system. It will, of course, have a mixture of geothermal, solar, solar thermal, wind, and biomass to create energy.
Yeah.
It's the first of a network.
In the right controlled temperatures, and they're already going to have aeroponics and aquaponics, so you're going to have the algae.
Yeah.
Biomass makes perfect sense.
And apparently they're looking at doing it at a global scale. The first 100-home village is on the outskirts of Almere, a quick-growing town 20 minutes by train from Amsterdam. Inside Almere, the company is also building a scaled-down version with 35 condo units. The company also has projects planned in Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Germany, but plans to expand everywhere.
Well, I'm not surprised at the nations that they picked. If this is successful, I very much see Denmark probably being the next nation to embrace this. And Germany, if it is profitable, quickly thereafter.
Yeah. Next, the company wants to adapt the system for arid climates, such as the Middle East.
Nah, we need to adapt this for space flight.
Get off this rock, huh?
You know, actually, this is not bad.
No.
To be inside a dome.
Nope. This would work.
It could work inside a dome pretty easy.
With the aquaponics, the aeroponics, and the biomass, and the gas plant, you got the makings of what you need.
Mm-hmm. The community in Almere will break ground this summer and be completed in 2017. We'll check back and see if the zombie apocalypse starts there or ends there. Because it does certainly, with their "we're going to grow from here, we're going to have cities everywhere," it does kind of sound a little bit like Umbrella Corporation, you know, seed groups.
Mm.
You know, just to get a little bit tinfoil-y there, you know. But hey, I love it. I want these kind of things to be everywhere.
Sign me up.
Exactly.
Just sign me up.
I think the lizard people would be very happy with these small communities, because if you cluster people into smaller pods that they're happy in, they're easy to control because they're not going to go anywhere.
I think the reptiloids will be pleased with this. I think that may be the case.
Welcome to my brain, Dan.
Well, right now, good idea. Hong Kong having different extradition qualities from mainland China.
Hong Kong refuses to return bookseller Lam Wing Ki to China.
Yeah. Here is a story of a man who's essentially being prosecuted by the Chinese government for disagreeing in writing with the Chinese government. He was allowed into Hong Kong, and he explains to the Hong Kong authority what was going on, and Hong Kong's going, you know, when we came back and became part of China again, we had certain laws passed where we, as a police force, don't have to listen to the mainland police force. So, no, we're not giving you back over.
Very nice.
Well, this is one of those little things that can spiral into bigger things.
But
so
no,
this
get,
will
no,
be
kidding.
Worth
yeah.
watching.
Lam Wing Ki was seized in the Chinese city of Shenzhen, where most of your stuff comes from, by the way, last October. He was allowed to return to Hong Kong in June. On his return, he told a news conference that he had been kidnapped by an elite force in China, forced to confess, and denied the right to see his family and a lawyer. Uh-oh.
He's not the only one.
I'm not surprised, yeah. On Tuesday, the Ningbo Public Security Bureau warned Mr. Lam to return to the mainland. Otherwise, they will be forced to take other legal measures, state news agency
Xinhua.
Xinhua.
X is CH.
Okay. Xinhua reported. But Hong Kong Security Chief Lei Tongkok. Sure,
Tung
I'll go
clock.
With that. Tung Kwok? Yeah. Insisting,
Think
Mr.
Tung Kwok. With an odd lisp.
Yes. would not be sent back. So, yeah, I think you've nailed it there. Yeah, Hong Kong, yeah, we don't have to. One country, two systems. Very nice.
Yeah, that's how Hong Kong law operates.
Yeah, because Hong Kong is still a hardcore capitalist enterprise. In fact, it's the reason China actually is functional.
No, I saw that and I went, that's fantastic.
That is good, yeah. You're
going to be a Chinese dissident, get to Hong Kong quick.
It would appear that that is the case. And stay there. Hong Kong's a nice place, from what I hear. So.
Oh, it's a fantastic place.
All right. Are we back to solar roadways? What's this?
Oh, yeah.
This is awesome.
Yep. Yeah, okay. I was one of the guys who actually did a little bit of backing of Indiegogo, or solar roadways, and did a little Indiegogo campaign. So I get updates on all things that happens. And they've done a couple of parking lots here, a few places here. Well, they recently just got, thanks to the Missouri Department of Transportation, they have been allowed to install some of this around Route 66. The wonderful, famous, historic highway is actually going to be paved with solar panels. Some sections of it are.
Huh.
They are starting, Solar Roadways specifically is starting with their panels at the historic Route 66 Welcome Center in Conway and should have them installed before the end of the year.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Huh. I am skeptical.
Super awesome.
I am skeptical.
Really?
Yes.
We need one on the show.
There's certain parts of this technology that I'm not sure they've ironed out all the kinks of yet. Mainly, what it's going to sound like when you drive over it.
Like a bridge.
At 55 to 75 miles an hour.
Well, they probably haven't had it in long enough stretches to make any real estimates of that.
Right.
So,
because given the texture that I see on it, I can imagine that being a noisy, noisy friggin' ride.
I don't think that's going to be any noisier than asphalt, because asphalt is not smooth either.
Well, what's your skepticism here, Andy?
The underlying infrastructure underneath the panels.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The substrata. The panels? Yeah, that's fine. That's not a problem at all. It's what's underneath them. How long will that last? How much does it take to install that?
Okay.
I mean,
I can see your point.
Really, that's also the secret to its possible success.
True.
But the thing is, unlike the Autobahn in Germany, that has many, 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 many layers of structure underneath it, which makes it a very resilient surface and safe to travel at high speeds on time and time again. The roads here in the United States are thin-skinned.
Yeah.
Now,
anyone who's driven to Tallahassee can tell you that.
Yeah. Now, in some parts of the country, we've done a better job because of things like, I don't know, freezing. Where we have to make sure that the road doesn't crack all the time. Because otherwise... Oh,
it still cracks all the time.
Right. Now, that's not a problem with the solar roadway because they have built-in heaters. That's part of the charm. It's supposed to melt the snow so that it goes away. So you don't have to have plows coming through. You don't have to have any of that. You know, you're not going to be knocking off markers because there's little lights built into it. Great stuff. Fantastic. It's all modular. You can pop them out, put them in. You know, no big deal. Potholes, they go away. But it's expensive. It's really expensive. And we do not like putting up upfront cost for a long-term gain. That's my skepticism. True.
That is the American way.
It's a wonderful solution. Fantastic. But people are cheap and short-sighted, and that's the problem.
The most hilarious thing is, though, the whole springing for this and getting all the stuff redone with solar roadways, the upfront cost is literally the reason the government exists and the main reason why that whole stuff is there. It's They spring initially for the thing that no one sees any value in, nobody sees a use for. They lay it all out. Yes, people, the government laid out all the roads because no business would pay for it and paid for the upkeep, and then every business uses it. They build for the common usage.
Right.
They build for the common good.
Yes.
Now, the other wonderful thing about the roads, and I think I mentioned this on one show way back, but, you know, I am a fan of this solution, because what you end up with is a utility corridor that goes everywhere.
Yeah.
You don't have to have overhead power lines anymore, because you can run them underneath the road. You don't have to have, you know, crazy, you know, underground pipes, because you already have a channel that's running your sewage, it's running your clean potable water, it's running all your utilities and all your services right there, where anybody can access them that is authorized to do so.
Just giving a little bit of thought to your concern, this might be cheaper to implement than anticipated, because they could basically just add another layer on top of the existing roads of concrete and then build the stuff on top of that.
That's possible. It all depends on how deep they want it to be and whether or not they want that, that service channel properly.
You've got the existing road as like a base layer, and then you build on top of that. It's just that much stronger.
Yeah, but are they going to do it? They're going to half-ass that. You know?
Well, the roads are already half-assed.
There you go. No, you just said it. The roads were already half-assed. There's your problem.
The roads are already half-assed. So you can't use them as that. You can beef it up.
Yeah, but you can't do that. Because then you have an unsavory layer in between. Because if it's unless it's concrete, which is built to last, then it's going to be asphalt and it's going to shift under the load. Because it compresses naturally. We can see that in the way that trucks go over it and create grooves in it. You know, it compresses over time. So that would have to all be stripped off anyway. You'd have to go down to a substrate. And basically all of this would have to then be a concrete solution underneath it. And there's a reason that we don't have concrete roads everywhere. It's because it's expensive to do. Also, there's an enormous impact, because concrete is not exactly a carbon negative solution. It's very carbon heavy. So it is it's a polluter. So depending on
like Tron out there.
Hmm?
We can finally make it look like Tron out there.
That's true. We can make it look like Tron. It's a long-term solution. It has to be a super long-term solution, and
somebody came up with a concrete that instead of being carbon rich is actually carbon dioxide rich. So they're using carbon dioxide as like a binder or something in there.
Yes. No. Out of Japan. Mm-hmm. Yay, Japan. They're taking and using captured carbon dioxide in a liquid medium to use as a binder to make new forms of building materials. So it actually takes carbon out.
Yep.
Really, all we need is hempcrete. If we go with hempcrete, I'm all in favor of it. Rock and roll. Let's do it.
Hey, well, I mean, we can get a supply of that from Colorado.
That'd be wonderful. Basically, it's just the underlying structure that concerns me. And if they actually do it right, then I'm all for it. But I'm afraid they're going to half-ass it, and it's going to become dangerous if they do
fair.
So.
That's not a fair assessment.
Not for the prototype?
No, for the prototype, it's going to be such a small run, it'll be great. Yeah. It's whether or not that gets taken to a contractor and they do it right over a long distance. I mean, it could, in many of these cases, it could be a preformed, prefabbed solution that is then you just dig it out, put some strata in, and drop it in.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Like a bridge. You know? That would work. But I don't know. I don't know if that's
going to... There's lots of things that would work. I think it's almost a matter of criminal negligence that we don't have solar panels over every parking lot in Florida.
Yeah, just to keep us cool, man. It was 102.
Yeah, 102 just to keep today. You cool,
105 heat index in a non-air conditioned warehouse.
Yeah. Inside the warehouse.
Yes.
That's just, ah.
Do you want to know the temperature up here?
I
no,
do.
You don't want to know the temperature.
What's the temperature up there, David?
Oh, you know. It's
you're in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, low 80s.
Low 80s? Yeah. What's the lowest temperature that you've experienced up there so far?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when I travel all the time, I had to work outside negative 25.
In Minnesota?
No, it wasn't in Minnesota.
I'm talking Minnesota.
In Minnesota, it went down to negative 13 this past year.
Negative 13. Well, that's
a bit bitey.
That's chilly.
That was one year, or one day, actually.
That's chilly.
So it was an incredibly mild winter. Everybody was impressed and surprised.
Oh, that was a mild winter.
Yeah.
Minnesota, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay.
For Minnesota, so Andy, they're used to negative 40.
Andy, about that Seattle idea.
I'm still looking at Pacific Northwest. Yeah. That's still more my style, I think.
The cold's no worry because there's tons of heated walkways to go from building to building. So, you know, stuff that you have to worry about. And, you know, these would be wonderful in Florida for the frickin' summertime. And, in fact, they have them in Vegas. Is air-conditioned walkways to go from building to building when it's unbelievably ungodly hot.
So, essentially, for the winter, it's, you know, don't worry about the cold. The streets are on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just converse. Just it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Same solution, different environment. Yep. Oy.
Different challenges.
Yeah, different challenges. Okay. So I'm surprised that Solar Roadways is actually still around. I imagine that was going to be a very much flash in the pan idea.
Anything solar in America is a really tough sell. But, you know, this is a test bed that they're running on Route 66, which is going to get them some decent coverage. And I'm sure that there are other countries which are looking at it. Countries that want to do things like build fully sustainable communities.
Or even better, have enough energy resource to export it.
And yeah. In truth, this is like their third or fourth testbed.
So,
but this is the most publicly noticeable.
Yes.
Because it's historic Route 66.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no, just
and it's got moment. The got a, an actual State Department of Transportation behind it. So yeah, it's got some it's got some teeth now. So yeah, let's watch it. Let's see what happens. But I maintain my skepticism until I actually see some real results.
Yep.
It'll be a long term test anyway. So, wait, what's this here? Let's get back into election season. Green Party, Jill Stein, invites Bernie Sanders to take over the ticket?
Yep.
So many people want to see him run. But the reality is, he shouldn't. At this point in time, it would be a tactical error which would potentially cause a Trump presidency.
A Trumpocalypse, you say?
Yes.
Or get well again.
I know I said Trump argued, presidency, but what I meant, what it should have said, was Trumpocalypse.
But I can see the opposite side of this because of the way the current sides are, because of the amount of people who may just straight up protest vote or not vote. This might actually cut in and could upset. A possible Trumpocalypse.
Well,
it's hard to call.
Remember, the largest voting bloc in the country are the independents.
There's so much animosity going into this election cycle.
In my opinion, if he was taking over the Green Party ticket, the Green Party has baggage.
Yeah.
If he was going to run independent. He needs to run fully independent, not pick up somebody else's leavings.
I just thought it was neat that Jill Stein was actually going, hey, you know, we can come collaborate, you can come talk, we can converse, or you can take over this. I'm going, that's an interesting thing.
It gives her, well, one, I legitimately think that she sees Bernie as somebody who could win. Two, it also gives the Green Party a little bit more interest in the election cycle for just, you know, 48 hours.
So there's so many different pieces to this chessboard that are moving around that it's difficult to predict anything.
I would like to avoid this.
Yeah.
Most people would.
What I kind of see happening in the circles that I run is the younger generation really fought for their guy, Bernie.
Yeah.
And he's not going to make it.
No, because of corruption and a...
lack of media coverage.
Well, it's not just the lack of media
coverage. It's mostly corruption.
It's the corruption and
It's lack of media coverage, too. I agree with that.
But there's also a mass amount of voting fraud.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Organized voting fraud by disparate groups that are not working in concert. But it's a mass thing.
Now, here's the thing that keeps getting overlooked by most of the talking heads that have completely dismissed, you know, the Bernie or bust crowd. They think that the Bernie or bust crowd were Democrats. They actually think that.
No, but they were independents for the most part.
They were never going to vote Democrat anyway. They were never going to vote Republican.
Yeah, most of them jumped onto the Democratic bus just to try to get Bernie on the ticket.
Yeah. Now, there's also those that are so in hatred of either of them, you know, the demagogues on either side, that they have gravitated towards, you know, what they see as some rational solution.
And basically what's going to happen is they're going to rational solution their way out of any reasonable candidate.
Well, it ends up being like a third and a third and a third.
Yeah, that's my argument is honestly, from my perspective, neither of the candidates are reasonable. The two main parties. Sorry.
No, I don't think they are.
Your opinion, man.
We had at least one from one party, and then we had, I want to say, Kasich was the closest to being reasonable from the other party.
It was
sadly, yeah, and even he was
kind of there.
Look at his policies; he was pretty far down.
He was pretty far down, but as far as being close to reality, or at least acknowledging what reality existed around him, he was probably the only voice on the GOP side that came.
Except for that entire "let's disenfranchise all women."
Well, you know,
again,
that GOP.
It was no worse than Trump.
Is that what we're having to be forced to
lowest common denominator?
Worse than Trump.
Well, lowest common denominator.
It's not even having to settle on. I would say it's the fact that that's where the bar currently is.
Food poisoning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
what? How would you like to be food poisoned?
Dr. Phillips, or do I want to eat Taco Bell?
What are my choices
this evening?
Do you want salmonella, or do you want botulism,
or E. coli?
That's what it feels like.
That's yeah. Yeah,
I'm sorry, on
the GOP side, that's what it feels like.
Okay, well, let's talk third party.
We've fallen.
Let's talk third party for a second, since that's what this is all about.
The Green Party
is, in order to get on the ballot, you got to have 15%. Well, not the ballot, but in order to get into the debates, you have to have 15%.
15% of the vote.
The Green Party is probably not going to make it.
No.
The Libertarian Party, however, they're getting close. Green Party
they're polling around that 9% area right now.
Actually, no, they're like 11.5. Green Party's about 9.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, both of them have got a lot more numbers recently. Shocker, yep. Right?
All disenfranchisement,
dissatisfaction with the status quo.
Yeah. So
because we have two parties controlling everything, and they cannot and will not work together to make things work.
Yeah.
We're in a different era, but we're seeing a slightly similar thing to when Clinton was first elected, with Perot and mm-hmm. Bush won.
The pie has been cut into three roughly equal pieces.
Yeah.
So you've got the Democrats taking up a third, Republicans taking up a third. And then you've got the Green Party and the Libertarian Party slicing that other third into two.
Piece of pie, yeah.
They don't see eye to eye on hardly anything. So they're not going to get together.
They're more polarizing than the Republicans or the Democrats in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Now, on many issues, they do see very squarely. But unfortunately, it's the things that make them different make them very different.
Yeah.
So, well,
there's just that the Libertarian Party, it has some reasonable people, and then their whack jobs, they're not from this rock.
No.
Yeah. There are a lot of them that are very, very odd.
The core ideals that they push do not work with more than five people.
Yeah, no, they're not from this rock.
Now, Gary Johnson, who is their nominee, he's actually worked in real government.
Yeah.
He actually has a head on his shoulders. And many of the things that he doesn't agree with the party on are because he knows what actually works.
Yeah.
You know, of the people that were in their debate, he made sense. The others might as well have been in a straitjacket already. As far as John McAfee, I'm pretty sure he was already wearing one. It was just under his shirt.
Yeah. Is that why his arms were so stiff the whole time?
That might have been it. That might have been it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super duper crazy man.
It's like saying, yeah.
While the debate was held in Florida, we've got Florida men for days.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Well, I mean, if you do look at what's happening in Florida right now with the toxic algae that's floating around everywhere as a direct result of deregulation of the sugar farming. Yes, there's a reason why we put regulations in place, because of shit like that.
Yeah.
See that right there? That's why we have regulations.
And because there is no company that is going to volunteer to help clean that up.
No.
No. And that's why you have a justice system.
Right. That's why you have the government able to come in and actually do those things. Except we also have a Rick Scott, which means that's not going to happen. Because he's going to stand in the way because he's not getting his way.
Well,
he's not benefiting from it.
Right.
Well, I wish He-Man would just give him fucking Castle Grayskull and we could all move on with our lives, but that's not going to happen.
No, dude, wrong analogy. We need Florida Harry Potter.
Yes. We need the boy that lived.
I feel like the way his skin is stretched over, that's an inchy human mass, man.
Oh, you and your reptiloids.
And there's nothing but bones under there.
You and your reptiloids.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I was about to go make the Lizard Man reference. We all know for a fact that was Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And then there's Rubio. He needs to be moistened.
No, Rubio Bot.
Rubio Bot needs Rubio fluids. Bot,
yes,
Rubio
exactly. Bot, yep.
He still needs fluids, though.
I have laughed the prerequisite number of times.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's about right.
He has a preset laugh limit.
Where's the lie? Where's the lie?
No, none.
There you go, Mike, in memory of you.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, currently polling between 4 and 6. 9 out of 10 voters don't know enough about Stein in order to pass judgment. Which is not a giant surprise because they're not getting less press than Bernie ever did. So,
you know,
that's because they're not taken seriously.
Yeah.
If you want to know why the state of politics was the way it was, all you have to do is take a moment to realize that GE owned most of the news organizations for like the past decade or two.
Yeah, there's only five companies that control the news.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things that drives me nuts is we need our Teddy Roosevelt, ladies and gentlemen. We need somebody who's going to bust up the monopolies.
Yeah.
We also need another Roosevelt, and that we need a new deal.
Wouldn't hurt.
We also need somebody who's going to change the way investor-driven companies are run. Because you know who's on the board of directors for most publicly traded companies? CEOs from the same, from that company's direct competition generally
now,
make up.
Hold on.
Large percentages of that board of directors.
Hold on. Hold on. Let's talk about Tesla. Because we've had a fatality.
Yeah. We had one.
Yeah.
They had their first.
Yeah. So the first U.S. fatality. The first U.S. fatality using self-driving technology took place in May when the driver of a Tesla S sport car operating the vehicle's autopilot automated driving system died after a collision with a truck in Florida, federal official said Thursday. Had to be Florida, of course.
The roads are crap.
The government is investigating the design and performance of Tesla's systems. Preliminary reports indicate the crash occurred when a tractor-trailer rig made a left turn in front of the Tesla at an intersection of a divided highway where there was no traffic light, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said. The Tesla driver died due to injuries sustained in the crash, which took place May 7th in Williston, Florida, the agency said. The city is southwest of Gainesville.
Yep.
Tesla said on its website that neither the driver nor autopilot noticed the white side of the trailer, which was perpendicular to the Model S, against a brightly lit sky, and neither applied the brakes.
So essentially, this wasn't just an autopilot failure. If it had been just a regular guy, still would have happened.
Well, in the Teslas, you're supposed to be paying attention. It's beta software. You know,
in all likelihood,
you've signed
driver
on that
was
way.
Like reading a book or text or something,
or napping or who knows. But one way or the other, he didn't notice it. The car didn't notice it, and he's dead.
The car didn't notice it more than likely because of just being able to see something bright on top of something bright.
Yep.
Basically, also, now, the Teslas have been in a number of collisions because people are stupid. And the car is rather resilient. Except when you drive a car that's rather sporty and low underneath a tractor trailer, it tends to decapitate the car as
and
well as the
driver.
Yeah. So the high ride height of the trailer combined with its positioning across the road and the extremely rare circumstance of the impact caused the Model S to pass under the trailer. And well, yeah.
It's called duck.
Yeah. Now, had he been properly reclined in a sleeping position, he probably would have survived.
Ha ha ha.
That's what's ironic. Had he really been sleeping, he probably would have been okay.
He's probably texting.
Might have been.
I know what he wasn't doing. Activating the bio-warfare system.
That's true. Well, that's in the Model E.
Yep.
Yeah. The company said that this is the first known death in over 130 million miles of autopilot operation. That's a lot of autopilot operation for a car that's not technically autonomous.
You know, in comparison, it's actually, I think, better than NASA's record.
Yep.
It's better than a lot of things. So even in this bad news scenario, it's pretty good.
Yeah, but there's going to be a lot of pressure on the NTSB to just stick coals into Tesla, if you will, because they're the new kid on the block and they're just killing it.
Yeah.
Just killing it. In ways that none of the all of the automakers that existed before them said what they're doing is impossible.
Technology has reached a point where it's no longer impossible. Tesla conceded that the autopilot feature is not perfect, but said in a statement that it's getting better all the time. Quote, when used in conjunction with driver oversight, the data is unequivocal that autopilot reduces driver workload and results in a statistically significant improvement in safety.
It's like, how many Teslas are on the road And statistically speaking, how much safer are they or less safe are they compared to a normal vehicle?
I think that's data
that we should be looking at.
I think you are statistically safer in a Tesla than outside of a Tesla.
Yeah.
At least
just based on the crash safety rating overall.
Yeah, the crash. I think they scored like an 11 on a 10.
I think the scale generally goes to 5, and they scored like a 6. They had to invent a new rating.
Yeah, they went over the scale because they were scoring that well.
That's because Tony Stark can throw money at it.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Well, that and when you build an electric car, you have an extremely low center of gravity, and you don't have a lot of extremely heavy parts. So you have, you don't have a giant, extremely heavy part in one section of the car.
Well, it depends on where you put the battery. Because you can do it like a sports car and have it in the center of the vehicle, which stabilizes it and gives it a better center of gravity.
Well, basically, the...
Which is what they do.
The bottom of the passenger cabin is battery.
So, again, it's essentially a center-engined vehicle, but instead of it being a sports car, which has no backseat, it's a standard vehicle.
Yeah.
It's a sedan, plus you have the trunk for crush zone, plus... Instead of an engine up front,
you have two trunks.
You have one in the front and one in the back, which are giant crush zones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can actually crumple as opposed to, oh, surprise, engine to face.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel good.
I would like to not find out. I will just take your word for it that that's not
comfortable. I want to see... What I want is to move forward like two decades when all the tech is there and has been tested and it's ready to be on market and it's already had a couple of Model Ts, which the E? I can't remember which one.
Model 3 is one that just came out.
Well, this was the Model S.
Okay, but the one that they're planning on mass marketing to the three.
That's the Model 3. Yeah, it's not out yet at all.
The which is essentially their Model T is on its third gen. That's when I want one.
Oh yeah, I would like one.
That's coming out next year, I believe.
Well, eventually. They have so many orders for it that
it'll take years
for it to actually be
I also like their model is there's not dealerships.
Well,
there are, but they're all owned by Tesla.
So you're essentially ordering your car factory direct.
Not all states are even allowing them to have dealerships present, like New Jersey, for instance.
Well, again, I think we've gone over that.
So what is this episode? Screw Jersey?
Yeah.
Fuck you, New Jersey. Yeah.
Did we cover that in a previous episode about the law of car dealerships?
Car dealerships? No, I don't think we did.
There actually is a law in several states where, and you have a lot of it is northeastern states and steel mill states, where the actual car manufacturer is not allowed to own the dealership.
Oh, yeah.
To kill direct competition for regular dealerships. Because, of course, the manufacturer owns the dealership. They can bring the same cars in that you're trying to sell for like 3/4 of your price because it's direct. There's no middleman.
Yeah.
So it automatically undercuts you, and we have a problem with this. And so in a lot of states, they made sure a lot of laws got passed where you're not allowed to do that. That's why you don't see Ford-owned dealerships or Dodge-owned dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
And that's driven by private dealerships and banks.
Yep. They don't have direct owning.
Yeah, the banks are getting basically a nice kickback because the dealership is going to basically rip your head off and give you a crappy deal on a loan.
Yeah. Now, here's the real deal, though. The Tesla death comes as the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration is taking steps to ease the way onto nation's roads for self-driving cars, an anticipated sea change in driving where Tesla has been on the leading edge. Self-driving cars have been expected to be a boon to safety because they'll eliminate human errors, and human error is responsible for about 94% of crashes. 94% of how many?
Millions?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Oh, looking for the actual number? Oh.
Let's see. Nearly 1.3 million people die in road crashes each year, an average of 3,287 deaths a day.
And they...
Additionally, 20 to 50 million are injured or disabled.
More than half of all road traffic deaths occur among young adults, 15 to 44, which is the prime workforce for the country as well. Yep.
That's cool. Yeah. Annual U.S. is 37,000 people die. 2.35 million are injured. Yeah. So 94%. Yeah. Again, who's ever been in an accident here? You take your eyes off the road for just, you know, less than a second, and the guy in front of you happens to hit the brakes at the same time.
That or you're parked at a red light and the guy runs into you for no reason.
Yep.
Yeah.
But literally no reason whatsoever.
That's why I loved having an SUV.
It's just that, oops.
That scenario hilarious.
Yep. So, let's see. What's 94% of 1.3 million? A lot of freaking people.
Yeah. That'd save a lot of lives.
Over a million.
How many millions of miles did Tesla go before they had their first fatality?
130
million. 130
million
miles.
No, 130,000 miles, I believe.
No, 130 million miles on autopilot.
Holy cow.
130 million miles.
I'd say I'd rather take my chances with autopilot.
Yep.
Yep.
And everyone else should,
too. I feel pretty solidly about that.
And the more of us do, the less of us will die.
Well, yeah, it's all about, you know, driver fatigue. I know this from having done dispatch for an airplane company. For air freight.
I have fallen asleep at the wheel twice. And... once I just ran off the road and didn't hurt anything, thankfully. I woke up. The second time I ran into the back of a tractor trailer.
Ooh.
On I-95.
Ooh.
Ow.
Thankfully, I woke up like right before I hit. So I slammed on the brakes and managed to, my car nosed down and I scraped on the tail bar. You know, for the trailer, and it took from my headlight up to the windshield off the car, killing my electrical system like that.
Glad you're still here.
So all my electrics went, all the lights in the car went. He had no idea anything happened, and my car just went black and off to the side of the road. But yeah, it was late. I was super tired, obviously. And, you know, if I could have had an autopilot, I would have taken it. Absolutely. Because highway hypnosis is a thing.
Yeah.
There's a reason why the German roads are built the way they are.
Yeah. American roads suck because we're designed so that a giant plane can land on any of them.
Yep. On the highways.
But beyond that, also, it's simple driver fatigue.
Yeah.
Just having to pay attention constantly to all that's going on around you. If you're able to do autopilot, you're able to actually, people would realize this, you're able to actually pay attention to a lot more because you're not thinking, okay, all the little subconscious things you're doing in muscle memory from just, okay, speeding up, slowing down, paying attention to all that.
Well, here's another question for you guys. How many times have you arrived at a place and not known how you got there?
Oh,
a couple times.
Many times. There have been many times I've gone, well, I'm glad my internal navigation system worked, because I remember pulling up to the light that was 10 miles from my house, and I'm pulling to my house, and I go, huh.
Yep.
There were times.
And you know what? You didn't fall asleep, but you certainly weren't awake either.
Nope.
Yeah. No, there were some times where the long blink.
Oh, yeah.
You blink, and suddenly you're in a different part of the city. And you've changed lanes, and there's different cars around you, and you're like, the hell just happened to me?
Yep.
All right. This is disconcerting.
Yes.
I'm awake now. Okay. Yeah.
So.
No, it's.
This is just four of us, ladies and gentlemen, in the audience. Yeah, and I know that all of this rings true to you, too, even if you're not going to admit it, because you're human.
Or
and humans are very bad drivers.
If it hasn't happened to you, it's happened to somebody you know.
And most of the people around you.
Because, again, We all genuinely know 100 people. I will guarantee you, 17 of those people have had this stuff happen to them. So over 10%...
You're being super conservative.
Yeah, it's almost...
I would reverse it. I would say maybe 17 of those have not had this happen to them.
Hey, that's why you have me on. Different opinion. But, no, over 10% of the people you know have had this happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Over 10%. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah, even if it's 10%, it's frightening.
Who have gotten lucky.
And just remember, guys, statistics have shown blaring the radio as loud as you can, screaming along with it, and having cold air blow on your face doesn't actually help.
Nope.
Nope.
So better to pull over and pass out for 15 minutes.
Yep.
Yep.
A power nap works wonders.
And power nap, go into a gas station, grab a giant cup of coffee with all the sugar you can handle.
Well, here's the thing about that. A nurse trick that I learned was the coffee nap. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
So you take a big cup of coffee. You know, you load it with the sugar or whatever you want. You down that as quick as you can, and then you go to sleep for 20 minutes. The coffee will then take about 20 minutes to get through your system.
Yep, 10 to 20 minutes for caffeine to kick in.
Yep. So then you have both taken a nap, and you now have the coffee in your system to do the job it needs to do. The coffee nap has probably saved more lives because it gets nurses through their shift than anything else.
Oh, yeah. Second or third leading cause of deaths here in the States. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yep,
so,
third leading cause of deaths.
But if next week doesn't suck, we should probably cover that.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see what the world has in store for us. And with that, oh, well, we've got one more, don't we? One more.
It's a small one.
It's a small one, after all.
Brexit. Oh. Okay.
This is me. This is Germany's reaction to the Brexit.
And you're in one of the most modern parliament houses on Earth. The Reichstag tour guide said.
This is sort of like grandiose little like storytelling posturing at the beginning of the article, but the meat and potatoes is you've got two sides. Oh, yeah. You've got two sides pulling apart in Germany when it comes to reactions to Brexit. One is very predictably German, which is we must do everything in our power to protect the European Union by changing it.
We can't give you any potato chips because then everyone else will want the potato chips.
Yeah, well, that's actually most of the EU's position on dealing with Britain and their Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
But the article actually goes into what happens next, and Angela Merkel and her finance minister, more so, wants to change the EU so that it gives nations more and more sovereignty, thus weakening the EU. And then opposing them is a number of politicians, not just in Germany, but elsewhere as well, that wants the EU to become even stronger and more interconnected, instead of it being the four freedoms, actually increasing them and making Europe more and more of a singleized nation. You can obviously see by my arguments which ones I favor, because if the EU wants to be the EU, they need to be more interconnected. More national sovereignty is not going to make you a more important or a stronger voting bloc on the world stage.
They are literally having the battle of states' rights versus federal rights.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And it's happening this late in the game.
And all on a much more macro scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, with states that have that are older than our own country,
and have very there's a great deal of nationalism that is sweeping through Europe because of the Brexit, and they're having to fight this upswell of nationalism, and that's part of the reason why we're having this entire Angela Merkel and her finance minister thing, where no, we need to change the EU and make it so that there's more national sovereignty, which undermines the entire principles of the EU. It's like they don't listen to themselves.
Well, it's what the people of the EU want to hear. But
that's an excellent point.
It's what they want to hear, so it may keep her in power. Whether she delivers on that and how that's actually delivered, I mean, you can basically throw some bones out there that are essentially meaningless, but look good to the people.
A politician's first job is to remain in office, to stay a politician. Exactly. The second job
Those are excellent points, but again, you have... I hate hammering these points because what it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, no.
You have this swelling of nationalism throughout Europe.
Yeah.
You have a minority group that's being blamed for pretty much every single trouble and evil that has befallen Europe.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the Polish?
Not quite. Here.
The Muslims.
Yes, that's the answer. And
the immigrants, the refugees.
So you're having, and also we're having an economic downturn on the global scale. You know, the very recipes of World War II.
I think
all we need is a prince or somebody to get executed.
I think
that's one.
I know, but still, then we can have a nice little trifecta of
both of them were kicked off of executions, essentially.
Yeah,
that were more or less scapegoats for that's it. Let's rumble. But in the position that the EU is in, I think. It may not be what the people want to hear up front, but what they should do is, all right, give it 2 years, and we're going to watch what happens to Britain in the aftermath of this.
I know what would cause World War III. The EU just has to put financial sanctions on Great Britain.
Oh, dear.
That would do it.
No, they don't have to do that.
No, but that would completely mirror.
the thing that we're seeing and more likely what will happen, we're going to have a prime minister probably settled upon in the next 2 to 3 weeks. That prime minister will call for the Article 50 vote 2 to 3 weeks after that. If the vote passes, Article 50 will be enacted, and the actual Brexit will happen.
This is all just prelude.
Yeah, it will force exit negotiations. All the things that were promised by Farage and Boris will not come to pass.
No. They think that they're going to enter a new age of economic prosperity if they exit the EU.
Well, there were two things that were promised that were absolute lies.
Yeah.
Absolute slander. Which is
the NHS.
They would save millions of pounds per day.
No, it was per week. It was like 350 million pounds per week that they would then be able to pour into the National Health Service.
Which outright lie.
Yeah, because that money doesn't exist that way.
Who is nothing but a self-aggrandizing scoundrel.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is, well, upon exiting, we can then renegotiate with the EU to get access to the economic zone, the economic trade zone. And the EU is going, you can't do single serving. This isn't a la carte. If you want access to the trade, you have to except the four freedoms,
which includes
movement. Which is the main thing that they're going, well, we don't want these immigrants in our country. Do you realize how you sound?
No.
But no, they don't.
They here's the tack that really needs to be taken, is they need to allow, they need to force out Great Britain. Great Britain, the people of Great Britain need to get exactly what they wished for.
No, they're going to. But my outlook and concern on that end is,
do you think it's really going to happen?
How bad will it get in Great Britain before Great Britain ceases to exist?
Nah, Great Britain will still be
there. That'll happen in 2 years.
Great Britain will still be there. It's not going to go away.
I think Scotland's going to leave, and
Scotland wants to be part of the EU.
Yeah.
And if they have to have independence to be part of the EU, that's what they're going to do.
And there's actually more saber. The thing that's more surprising is there's more saber rattling about Northern Ireland leaving Britain.
Oh, yeah.
And Ireland welcoming that debt. That thing that they went, we're not taking Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
They're a welfare state.
Yeah.
We get to keep them. No, there's actual serious talk about bringing Northern Ireland and making the island whole because of the Brexit.
And I will say from that, there's a lot of, quote-unquote, Republicans, not GOP Republicans, but Irish Republicans, who are all about that.
Oh, yeah.
And then upon having a true and whole Ireland, then negotiating their state in the EU.
Yeah.
And if both Northern Ireland leave and Scotland leaves, that's no longer Great Britain.
Nope, it's done.
That's Wales and England. That's it. And their territories, which are few
and all the racism you guys want to have in your little pockets of Great Britain.
It's true. Well.
And you can not have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of.
So, all of this, you know, we're just low people here. We're pundits. We're just figuring this out, you know, from the dribs and drabs that come in over the wires. The national intelligence services out there, they know this. They knew this a long time ago because it's their job to figure things like this out. You know, what this is going to happen, where this is going to go. So, do you really think that a vote on Article 50 is going to happen in that way? Do you really think that they will continue the Brexit?
I at this point, the brakes haven't been put on in any way, shape, or form. We've heard tell of brakes, but nothing's materialized. Not a single word. Even after all that furious flurry of activity after the referendum passed.
Well, it's because Cameron left? Well, and that the...
No, Cameron bought them time. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Cameron bought them time to figure out a way out of this. But...
Well, that time's not quite up yet.
But it's coming to a close quickly. Quicker than they thought. Because people thought there were going to be more hats thrown into the ring about who's going to be the next prime minister. And a lot of people pulled out.
It's like, I don't want this sinking ship.
Oh, no.
A lot of people resigned.
Yeah.
And more people are conceding in the debates, so there are less and less individuals to choose from.
Basically, everyone who had a possibility of having a hat in that prime minister ring also realizes that, given the current state of things, to jump into that fight means political suicide.
I do not want to be the PM at the fall of the British Empire.
They will be the prime minister that oversees the breakup of the country.
Yep.
They will be a historical villain.
Yeah.
That's the realization. And no, it's materializing.
I would think that they're more like a tragic hero.
No,
trying against all odds to keep it together.
More grim. I mean, yeah. History has not treated Margaret Thatcher well. Whoever the PM for who signs Article 50 in, history's going to treat even more poorly. I mean, Cromwell levels of villainy will be heaped upon this individual. So,
well,
it is quickly materializing who the next prime minister is going to be. The ratifying vote ain't far away from that.
Well, I put a pound sterling on them not leaving the EU.
I will take that bet.
Okay. Let's see what happens.
See how much that pound is worth.
Ah, you see what I did there then?
Yes.
Alrighty.
I'll take my egg McMuffin.
If you lose that bet, it's going to be really cheap.
I know. That was my plan. That was my plan the whole time.
Well played, sir.
Yes. Okay, well, let's see. We're on to personal picks. I really don't have anything. I'm going to basically close up this show and then go to sleep and then go on vacation for the weekend. So there.
Nice.
So the show will air sometime when I'm back from vacation. So I don't have any picks this week. Well, I suppose I have a pick, but I'll go last. So, Daniel, do you have anything?
This week was too grim, my friend.
Too grim. Too grim. I understand. Steven, you've got one listed, though.
Yes, I have one listed. Netflix has had some great success doing their own original series. One of the ones that I love the most that I've really enjoyed is Marco Polo. They just recently released their second season of it, and it is just as good as the first. It follows, again, by Marco Polo. It's the adventures of Marco Polo in the court of Kublai Khan, you know, 1200 AD, all of the violence, all of what's going on, all the political intrigue. Game of Thrones, but actual, more historical look at things is the best way to describe it without the magic. It is a fascinating series, amazing, incredibly entertaining, and I highly recommend it. Both seasons are now currently on Netflix, and I'm here hoping they're going to have a season 3.
Okay. So Marco Polo on Netflix. Okay. I have recently been binging on audiobooks again, and after devouring those Peter F. Hamilton books and waiting for the last one to come out in his Confederation universe, I stumbled upon another kind of a shorter book, and it's in another series. I love my series because once I get attached to characters, I want to live in their world for a long period of time. And this one is called Space Carrier Avalon by Glenn Stewart. And let's see here. It's narrated by Eric Michael Summer. And let me give you a little taste here.
Vision of Recorded Books presents Space Carrier Avalon by Glenn Stewart. Narrated by Eric Michael Summerer.
This is at 1.1.
Chapter
speed.
1. New Amazon System. Castle Federation. 1800, July 5th, 2735. Earth Standard Meridian Date Time.
Blah, blah,
on approach
blah.
To DSC-001, Avalon. Wing Commander Kyle Roberts did not enjoy being flown by someone else. It was always a struggle for the Red...
It follows this particular wing commander through to... Basically, it's a space carrier. So, it's an aircraft carrier in space. It's huge. It was a prototype. So, some things aren't normal to other carriers later in its class. It's smaller, heavier, because of, you know, ridiculous armor amounts and things like that. And it just has some very unique quirks. It's also about to be mothballed. So they sent it to a backwater, and they're going to now use it as a publicity tour. The last gasp. You know, refurbish it, make it all spit and polish, shiny, equip it with all new fighters, and then send it on a tour of the colonies, basically. And then all hell breaks loose because, well, there are other plans around. So it's an interesting political intrigue story with an awful lot of space combat, too. So it's a fun book, and it merely starts a series. I'm not sure how many are in it, but it is the Space Carrier Avalon. It's really good. It's fun. It's a fun book. Let's see, how long is it? I usually like super long books, but I can't tell how long this is.
It's a struggle.
10 hours.
Pilot to keep his hands and implants away from.
Nah, stop it. Okay, so if you like some of my other picks, and you like space, and you like space battles, and you like naval intrigue and political intrigue and all that fun stuff, then I think you can do worse than to grab Space Carrier Avalon and check out the rest of the series. It's well written. It's got some good humor to it, and the depth of the characters is surprising. So there you go. And I don't think that we have anything left. Do we have anything left? Is that it?
I think that's it.
There's me.
Oh, what do you got? I didn't see anything in the show notes, so what you got?
I just thought of something real quick.
Oh, okay.
My pick is Master Chief in honor of show 117.
Nice.
Okie dokie.
Hail to the Chief.
Hail the Chief. Alrighty. Well then. Let's see, where's my there's
on that bombshell.
On that bombshell. Okay, that's it for tonight. We'll be back live next Friday about 9:30 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, the conversations continue on the web. Head over to orillyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O.com for all the links at the top of the page, so you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, and, of course, subscribe to the YouTube and the Twitch channel so that you know when we are live. Hopefully all that gets sorted out and we're not jibbery-jabbery and icky. But the YouTube will be fine. It'll just come a little bit later. Also, you can join in the chat and tell us whether or not things are working well, things are working bad, and you can guide the show from there. If you've stayed with us all the way through the credits, how about give us a hand? If you have a few dollars to spare, you can contribute to the Patreon and get early access to the show releases, and maybe even get some special perks here and there. Just follow the Patreon link on the webpage or go over to patreon.com/orillyradio. You can also make a one-time donation via the donate button on the page. If you can't fit us into your rainy day funds, do us a solid. Share the show. Leave us a review. We're always looking for new ideas for the show, so how about share what's on your mind with us? Go ahead and shoot us a note over to orillyradiopodcast@gmail.com, or if you're the more talkative sort, there's always the voice line at 470-222-ORLY-6759. It's also able to take your text as well. We can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight. Until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowan Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of incomptech.com. And of course, you can also visit the show notes and get all the links for everything that we talked about. Well, almost everything that we talked about. And we'll see you again real soon. Thanks, everybody. Bye. And done.
It's in the can.
It's in the can. Yay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. It has been real.